You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
Welcome to Inside the Locker. You know, a Marine was taking classes between his deployments in Afghanistan. One of his courses had a professor that was an atheist and a member of the ACLU. One day, the professor shocked everyone by walking into class, looking and stating, "God, if you are real, I want you to come down and knock me off this platform. I will give you 15 minutes, God." Several minutes ticked by in silence. When the 15 minutes almost expired, the Marine got up from his seat, approached the professor, and punched him in the face, knocking him off the platform and out cold. The Marine simply went back to his seat. The professor came to, visibly shaken, and he goes, "Hey man, why'd you do that?" The Marine said, "God was busy protecting America's military, who are out protecting your right to say stupid shit like that, so he sent me to fill in." Folks, welcome to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. With me, as always, JC DeLeon.
What's up?
Logan Urie.
Howdy.
And this may be a deal breaker. Elliot Fontenette is out today.
Boo.
He and the wife, they got some wedding pre-activities.
If you've seen the movie Saved, R.I.P. Robin Williams, that's what they're doing. They're doing marriage classes.
Marriage classes. That was a great movie. And of course,
I don't think I saw it.
Not Saved. License to Wed.
License to Wed.
That's that Mandy Moore and I thought Saved. Yeah. License to Wed.
Did you guys recognize that little story I just told?
I've recognized it because you texted us to the group earlier today.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's one of those things that pops up on conservative news feeds every once in a while. It's not fair to say conservative news feeds, like very religious, like Facebook feeds. It's like, here's a little shared moral. And I just love content like that. It just gets you going. So I just felt we should start the show with an inspiring message.
As a content producer yourself.
Yeah. It's good stuff. really one of my favorite like conservative red Facebook memes of all time. Just one of the best because it really just speaks to, like, it's obviously fake. It has like a million things that far-right people don't like. It has everything that people like Marines and God and protecting the war and the troops, which I love. I love all those things. And I just love it. But the reason I...
And bless you for it.
Thank you. The reason I start off with that is that our top topic tonight, being an Austin, Texas-based show, we kind of needed to talk a little bit about the Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, University of Texas coaching carousel.
R.I.P. Charlie Strong.
R.I.P. Charlie Strong. We hardly knew you. Logan, if we can pipe in some sad music here, maybe a little, I don't know. Don't Worry, Be Happy. If we can get a little Don't Worry, Be Happy.
I'll find some some license-free music that we can throw in here.
Let's do a little Don't Worry, Be Happy. But, one of the... Among UT Facebook circles, one of the things that was going viral was this, like, I think he was like a producer. Did you read this? I think he was like a producer on the Longhorn Network, and it was like a long Facebook rant about Charlie Strong and about the UT program.
The Vince Young story.
Yeah, exactly, right? And for those that didn't read it, basically he was saying the University of Texas is Vince Young. Right, that's the perfect way to describe UT, is to look at Vince Young and to look at this person who, and these are his words, not mine, he said Vince Young was like a barely functional adult who had no discernible skills, who was clinging to past glory, who was enabled, who was delusional. And he described several instances in which he hung out with Vince Young. So it was very gossipy. One of which was, he's like, countless times I've seen Vince Young get blackout drunk and get into his car, and no one says anything. None of the boosters say anything. No one goes, hey, Vince, don't do that, because he's just so enabled. He said that he was at a South by Southwest party, and he was getting in, and Vince Young got out of an Escalade wearing pajama pants and flip-flops and demanded to be let into the party. The guy who wrote this ultimately let Vince Young into the party, and as soon as Vince Young got in, he walked up to the back VIP room, demanded that everybody get out of the room, and grabbed a bunch of free beers and fell asleep on a couch with a big serving tray full of lunch meat on his chest and just passed out. He also said that Vince Young wasn't a bad guy. He was a good guy. He was just completely enabled, had no adult skills, was undeveloped, was lazy, was just Vince Young.
Yeah.
And he said that's kind of what UT is. And he said, I don't think Vince Young would have... I think Vince Young would have had a much different experience had he worked with Charlie Strong. And then he went on to say, hey, Charlie Strong is the hero that UT needed, not the one that we got. Or whatever the fuck that
not the one you deserve.
There you go. Yeah. And lamented that we lost this good man, this great disciplinarian.
It's one of the more surprising things. Like it's comforting that so many UT fans were kind of bummed out and losing like a genuinely good man. I remember one of the first things that came out when one of the first meetings he had with his coaches, when he like laid out his rules, and like the number three rule was like be nice to women.
No guns in the locker room. Core values.
Yeah.
And over the years, the core values became something of a running joke because that's all we could really point to were core values. And yeah, you know,
it's also sad that that was a running joke too, because those should be like expected.
It should be expected. And yeah, I mean, I think there's a real real concern in the state of Texas with where all this is the first time in I don't know how long that no Texas universities are ranked in the AP top 25. People are pointing out to players like Jackson Shipley and Quandre Diggs who basically peaked in high school, who kind of like developmentally peaked in high school and came to their schools kind of entitled. But also, Texas football works its players to the bone, and you max out a little bit in high school in terms of how big you're going to get, how fast you're going to be. You're playing football 9 months out of the year. And it's time for the state of Texas to really kind of look at what it's producing and what it's instilling in young men. And this goes to the larger point about how we prioritize football over what else. College athletics is one of our favorite things. It should be such a healthy competition that brings people together, that makes people happy. And just unfortunately, Texas is in a position where it has to win, where the only thing that matters are wins and not necessarily how good you are as an educator and how what you're actually doing for the benefit of these people long terms in their development. You know, making them live on campus, not off campus where they can live in a mansion for all people know and hang out and never go to class. One of my favorite things he did was not only do you have to go to class, but you're not allowed to sit in the back of the classroom. You have to participate. You have to be engaged. He did a lot of good things. And as a result, even though we sucked and were underprepared on the field, I really enjoyed the Charlie Strong years. I felt really happy, you know, supporting that team, that coach. You know, my wife and I took a trip to Chicago to see him play Notre Dame, and that was an expensive trip, but we did it because we wanted to support what was going on here. Mm-hmm. Until his dying day, Joe Jamail was condescending to him, Red McCombs was condescending to him. It was just one of those things. But at the end of the day, you have to be better than 5-7 three straight years. You just do it. Not because you're at UT, because you're anywhere. You can't have three losing seasons in a row and expect to keep your job. So
and it was even beyond the three losing seasons. I mean, as much as I liked him, as much as I wanted him to stay, if they would have turned around and kept him, I would have been happy with it. But I mean, yeah, it's hard to defend keeping him after the Kansas loss, because that was
that's what's so backwards about it. I mean, what you should say from the beginning, you know, because Charlie Strong got a number, right? He by all accounts was like, look, hey, Charlie, you got to win eight. You got to win eight now.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, we'll assess the body of work at the end of the season and see what happened.
Yeah.
And every week, he shouldn't be thinking, boy, this is a playoff game for my job. Yeah. That was a really unfair position that he was put in. You should be able, like any business, here's a review period, and then we'll assess things when the chips fall. Because there was decided improvement. The number one mistake, I want to ask you guys, actually, and I'll go last, not because I know more than you, but because in this, well, because I know more than you in this situation, but only because I'm, well, that's not fair to say. I'll go first, actually.
You've got more context, because you probably seen more games. I've been kind
of obsessively reading the blogs and stuff. And yes, I am a season ticket holder, absolutely. Section 29, row 17. Okay, so Charlie Strong, his number one mistake, in my opinion, was he hired his friends. Mm-hmm. He showed up to UT with Vance Bedford, his longtime coaching partner, made him the defensive coordinator. Sean Watson, longtime coaching partner, made him his offensive coordinator, and had to systematically fire them both. And did so, again, when we talk about preparation, year one, you know this doesn't work. You know that Watson and Swoops, that's not going to get you anywhere. So in the spring of 2015, you really have to hire an offensive coordinator, move on from Swoops, prepare something else. Instead, you get to the Notre Dame game, you get blown out 38-3, and then after the game, you have to fire Watson and Swoops. You spend the rest of the 2015 season promoting your wide receivers coach, Jay Norvell, making him the offensive coordinator, making Gerard Hurd, a quarterback who, again, wasn't ready to play, rushing him along. Another really good prospect out of Baltimore that decommitted from Florida State to go to Texas, Kyle Oxley, never developing him. He winds up transferring out of Texas because he doesn't really get a chance to see the field. Handled that poorly. This year, same thing with Vance Bedford. Very early on, it's very clear that doesn't work. You should have hired a defensive coordinator in early 2016 so that you don't enter the season having to coach your team on the fly. To his credit, when he took over the defense, a day and night improvement. Mm-hmm. This is a team that
when Charlie took over the defense
from Vance Bedford.
Definitely noticed that myself.
Yeah. The defense got just way better, way tighter. But at the same time, hanging on to some things that just weren't working. That he lived and died by this three-man rush that just didn't get pressure on Big 12 quarterbacks.
Yeah, just schematic. I mean, even this season, schematically, there was a lot of problems apparent. Even from game one, when they beat Notre Dame in that magical game, anytime Tyrone Swoops comes in the game, you know he's not going to do anything but run the ball, and it's like
it's going to basically run up the middle, maybe a little bit to the side.
Yeah, but. and I'd agree. Coaching staff was probably his biggest Achilles heel, and bringing in his friends, coming in. Major Applewhite, who's been a mainstay at Texas, mm-hmm. he's gone as soon as Charlie Strong shows up. Early word is that Major Applewhite might come back under Tom Herman.
Yeah, I think you can expect to see that for sure.
Yeah. I think coaching staff was one of his Achilles heels, and so that I think Tom Herman needs to learn from that.
Absolutely, and last point there. Sterling Gilbert and Shane Buechele, the freshman quarterback. And the first-year offensive coordinator that he poached from Tulsa, you can't have on-the-job training at a school as big as Texas, A&M. You have to hire a play caller. Mm-hmm. What he hired was a guy who ran the scheme that he wanted to see, that he thought he needed to instill in a Big 12 team. He didn't hire an experienced play caller, and you saw that. And so the Texas offense, 2 months into the season, once there's all the film you need to see, became predictable, easy to stop. You saw games where Heisman Trophy candidate Deontay Foreman had 50 carries. You saw games where you knew that even on 3rd and 13, they're going to play action pass because Shane Buechele isn't really comfortable throwing under center and needs that play action option read as part of his throwing progression. You had a kid who is small. Your quarterback at the University of Texas was an immobile, undersized freshman who didn't have a big arm, held onto the ball too long, and most comically could not throw 5 to 9 yard routes. Those little slants, those little quick stick routes, the ones that have defined the greats like Tom Brady, he couldn't throw those over the middle. So you saw sideline to sideline throws and some deep balls. And 50 carries for Deontay Foreman. The offense became unacceptably bad at the end of the season. And again, bad, bad play calling from Sterling Gilbert. You know, how about this to me is the Sterling Gilbert moment. You're trying to beat Baylor. You're trying to line up a field goal. Third and one. You run a weird sweep with Tyrone Swoops in the 18-wheeler to the right, and you lose 6 yards, and now your field goal becomes a 43-yarder.
Yeah.
And luckily, Domingue, the terrible kicker, senior kicker, makes the field goal. So anyway, all this to say, Tom Herman. We went a little deep on Charlie Strong because this is one of the last times we'll probably be talking about him, right?
But before we get into Tom Herman, yeah. I wanted to ask you, like, I feel like I've heard ever since the beginning, there was a lot of pushback against Strong from a lot of the boosters, and potentially with some racial bias behind that. Did you give any credit to that? Do you think that was ever an issue at all?
I think it was. I think the idea was this guy isn't big enough for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, I think he was kind of a plain-spoken, folksy guy.
Kind of dismissive?
Yeah, dismissive of him. You know, he was also seen as this kind of, again, this sort of plain-spoken, folksy guy, and a lot of it was this guy isn't smart enough. And what you heard was the job is too big for him. And I agree, the job is way too big for him, by which I mean Mack Brown, the previous UT coach, was a statesman, a politician. He would travel around Texas. He remembered everybody's name. He did high school football banquets in the spring.
Yeah.
Mack Brown famously said that he had a piece of burnt orange clothing for every day of the week because every day of the year he had to represent UT in some capacity. Go on the golf course with the donors. He was a CEO and at his best was a great recruiter who hired strong coaches who ran the state ruled the state with an iron fist.
Yeah.
That's something that Texas football coaches have to do is be able to really align football coaches. And that's something that Mac at his best did. But the job is too big for Charlie Strong. That argument is also BS. Because his job should be just to coach football. Yeah. His job should be to be a football coach. His job, I don't care that he's not great in a room with boosters, right? I care that he has the space that he needs to work. And unfortunately, people were on his back constantly. And so I think there's a part of him that's a little bit relieved that he gets to take those $10.7 million and just kind of take a year off. And we'll see him come back at a big program. And I think you'll see him be successful sooner than later. If he can get to a Power 5 program that has a little more rope, you know?
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, it's the greatest thing about Texas is just their ability, just their national presence. But also the worst thing about Texas is their, like, the baggage that comes along with any sort of, like, high-profile association.
Yeah, it's kind of why I would hear some of the discussions among sports radio that I listen to where it's like, Texas used to be considered a top five job, but with all the pressure that comes and how long it would take to rebuild, like who would want all of that pressure?
Yep. Now that's it. I think the right guy can do it, and that's why I think Tom Herman is the right fit. And I think he's. I think that's why again, he got to Texas in a little bit of a sleazy way. There's a little bit of a there's video of him on Thanksgiving. Promising his players he's going to stick around. A day later, he's gone.
His players tweeting, like, he told us yesterday he was going to stick around.
He was going to stick around. There's a little bit of a kind of a gross career ladder angle. There's a little bit of a sort of like, he played LSU to leverage a deal. His agent leaked to the media that he had a deal on the table to kind of force Texas's hands to act. Because what the school wanted to do was, again, finish the year and see what happens. Theoretically, play in a bowl game and see what happens. Herman wasn't having any of that. Herman moved in quickly and made it happen. But again, he's a Mensa member, extremely successful. And I think Herman is a great football coach, potentially the next great football coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because the lows were so low under Charlie Strong and Charlie Strong left such a good team on the field, I tell you what, you look at the defensive line that Texas has, the young offensive line that Texas has, the linebacking core that Texas has, Chris Boyd, Holton Hill, the defensive backs that Texas has, a lot of talent. And I'm most excited about a player that we didn't see too much of because he was hurt, Chris Warren, who I think is going into the season was the best running back on the roster, just breaking out in a big way next year, coming back. And that wide receiving core, oh my God, that young wide receiving core with Devin Duvernay, with Dorian Leonard, with Foreman,
DuVernay fixed that that draw problem, he's going to be amazing.
He's with a kid you forget about, Johnson, Colin Johnson, just size, movement, potentially the best receiving core in the Big 12.
And that's one thing to consider, because I did hear a lot about when Charlie Strong first came here. He came here with an empty cupboard. Towards the end, Mack Brown didn't recruit as strongly as he used to. Charlie Strong was a good recruiter, and Tom Herman is coming here not with an empty cupboard.
Yeah, absolutely. And
it's definitely a much different situation now than it was then.
Yeah, and when you look at the quarterback situation in the Big 12 next year, that OU scumbag Baker Mayfield leaves. So it's a rebuilding year for OU. Kenny Hill at TCU is not the answer. The West Virginia quarterback, I believe, is a senior. I think next year John Herman's going to have a chance to win the Big 12. And I expect, and again, with the team that's in place.
He also went, it was like 11-1 his first year,
University of Houston. Yeah. And beat teams like, I believe he beat Florida State in a bowl game, beat Oklahoma to open the season. I think he's a great coach and even a better hire than someone like, there were rumors that Dabo Sweeney might be interested, that John Harbaugh might be interested.
I was glad that, as sleazy as it played out, because within hours after, not even hours,
hours
after,
yeah.
minutes, after Charlie Strong was fired and Herman was already moving his stuff into the office.
Yeah. I had 10-minute interviews with all the assistants and fired them all. Yeah.
Yeah, I will say I'm glad that it wasn't a super drawn-out process because, the weekend in the NFL following, the 49ers lost another game. And as unlikely as it would have been, I did not want to hear Chip Kelly rumors to Texas again.
Yeah. Okay. So I also want to come in here and say, yes, it was a little bit shady kind of the way he left there. But that is not just a Tom Herman thing. That is a modern college football coaching thing.
Absolutely.
It happens at every school. Anytime you're a mid-level, mid-school coach that has success, you're going to be lying to your players to tell them that you're not going to leave whenever you're going to poach by the next Power 5 conference.
Yeah. Oh, totally, man.
Yeah.
And speaking of, I just want to ask you, because we have you in the room, how do you feel about Texas A&M? Now, for those that don't know, Logan is our resident of Texas A&M Aggie. Texas A&M coming off of a disappointing finish to the season, ranked as high as number 4. How do you feel about Kevin Sumlin's future at Texas A&M? And what are the blogs saying? What are the tea leaves telling you?
So I like Coach Sumlin. I think that he's a good coach, but I defended him for a long time. But after this season, after this last loss, and the way that we've lost the past few games, I have lost complete confidence that he is going to be the coach to take us to the level that we want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's not gone this season, but next season his seat is going to be scorching hot, as it should be. He needs to win next season. If he wants to keep his job, he needs to win 9 games, and including beat either Alabama or LSU. He can't lose in the same fashion that he's been doing the previous couple of seasons, three seasons, four seasons, whatever it is.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And it's a shame because I like him. I think he's a good coach, but he, for whatever reason, he has not done. I don't know what the problem is, but there is a serious problem at Texas A&M.
Not with talent.
No, the problem is it's something to do with either development or culture or attitude or strength and conditioning or scheme or motivation. Something is wrong there, and it has yet to be fixed after this is the end of his 5th season.
Yeah. The Aggies are one of the few teams that can match up with Alabama, and it looks like a game, and they just didn't perform. They just didn't perform. They didn't finish. And every time you see A&M, in the Sumlin era, you think, boy, this team looks like it's going to blow everybody out of the water. Boy, this is a talented team. Look at these players.
It's a talented team, and then we just fall on our asses. We lose games that we shouldn't. We struggle in games that we should dominate, especially towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
I was expecting to lose to LSU, but I was not expecting to lose in the manner and fashion that we did.
Yeah, and that's, again, going back to Texas, the preparation is going to be there. The players are going to be there. And Texas will win the Big 12 next year.
Period. Hopefully.
You heard it here first.
Those are my expectations. Texas will have every opportunity to win the Big 12. And I think the real question is, are we going to go to Los Angeles for that week 3 Texas-USC game? Because you know it's going to be a good one. All right, speaking of college football.
Yeah, we spent 25 minutes on Texas football.
Well, but, you know, we had to give a proper eulogy to Chuck Strong.
R.I.P. Coach Strong.
R.I.P.
Coach
Strong.
I respect the hell out of you.
So, you know, there's no real sense playing the power rankings game since we all kind of agree with what the committee put out on Tuesday night, which is Bama 1, OSU 2, Clemson 3, the Huskies 4. Yeah, but what I want to do is I want to have like a little fun with chaos. Because this is, you know, a lot's going to happen. In fact, the only thing we know 100% sure is that Ohio State's going to go to the college football playoff as the number 2 team.
Yeah.
They've played their last game. They are one of the few teams in the country that, again, can match up with Alabama. They're a giant. Michigan, Ohio State passed Texas, Notre Dame this weekend as the highest rated college football game of the season. It got a 10+. So let's. I just want to play a little game I invented called Fun with Chaos. Let's say that Clemson loses the ACC championship. Washington loses the Pac-12 championship to Colorado. Okay. Wisconsin beats Penn State. Or no, let's say Penn State beats Wisconsin. Okay. And Oklahoma, we'll say they win Bedlam. So now, and let's say Bama loses the SEC championship to Florida. And now Florida is the SEC champion. So this is chaos theory. Your rankings are obviously going to be tweaked a little bit. What do they look like?
Bama's number one. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
So yeah. Bama loses and they're still one.
In that scenario, you see the flip of Ohio State 1 and Bama 2.
I think Bama's guaranteed in the championship game.
Bama and Ohio State are locked in. Okay, so Clemson lost. They're out. ACC isn't as strong. They've been underperforming all year, clinging to their record and their reputation. But if Clemson loses, they're out, in your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Clemson's out.
I think if we're talking, Colorado beats Washington and pretty much everyone else ahead of them loses.
Yeah.
But Oklahoma wins, which they're currently ranked 9th, and Colorado is ranked 8th. I could see potentially Colorado making the playoff,
making the 4.
Maybe it would have to be fucking chaos.
Well, it would come down to Colorado, Oklahoma, Michigan, or the Big Ten winner. So you would put, and here's where I think Clemson would be out. Are we going to literally jump Colorado above Michigan? They lost to Michigan. Are we going to jump Penn State above Michigan? They lost to that's the thing about Penn State. That's why Penn State won't get into the college football playoff.
That's tough, yeah.
They lost 49-10 to Michigan. You can't put a team that lost 49-10 in the playoff. Are you kidding me?
And I feel like because the playoff committee is a committee of humans and not robots, they'll think back to that Ohio State-Michigan game and
which was fucking epic,
by the way. And think maybe Ohio State got screwed at the end there, or Michigan got screwed at the end there. I don't think they did, but with that first
down. No, I think Ohio State deserved to win that game. But yes, it was a close game. It was a well-fought game. And I would not be mad if both Michigan and Ohio State were both in the playoffs.
It's why initially when we were doing show prep and I was asking, I was like, is the nightmare, not really nightmare scenario, but is the chaos scenario being that of all the years of the football playoff, we were, I don't know if worry is the right word, but concerned that there would be 2 SEC teams in the playoff.
Yeah.
It looks like the first conference I might get 2 teams in the top 4 is the Big Ten.
Well, I think that's – so let's say the
I'm
chaos –
I'm so mad that it's halfway through the season we were talking about A&M might be the second SEC team.
Oh, man.
Fucking shit. Sorry. Yeah.
So wait, but let's go to the chaos scenario. Bama, Ohio State, in no matter what. So that leaves two spots. And this is assuming Clemson loses, they're out. Washington loses, they're obviously out. Big Ten winner, Michigan, Colorado, Oklahoma. So let me start with the obvious. Well, USC's out.
Yeah.
Florida, though, Florida just beat Alabama in the SEC championship. It's Florida. You're not going to sneak him in the number four?
No.
I mean, not from 15.
They just beat Alabama in the SEC championship.
But also,
they won the best conference in the history of college football.
They've also had a very tumultuous season. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they lost to Florida State, right?
But a lot of the teams ahead of them are going to lose.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because there's a lot of other teams ahead of them.
It is weird how much potential there is for like massive chaos.
Okay, so let's say we have Florida out and USC, the team that nobody wants to play, that's probably the best team playing right now. Blah blah blah. They're not in the Pac-12, so we can't really justify putting them in. So then the question becomes, Clemson out, Washington out, Michigan in, without question. Then it becomes a sort of three-team scenario for the four spot, because you have Bama 1, Ohio State, Michigan in a rematch in a crazy semifinal. Mm. And then it comes down to Penn State, Wisconsin winner. So let's just say Penn State.
So
Colorado and Oklahoma.
So you're saying in this scenario, Colorado loses?
In this scenario, Colorado beats Washington.
Oklahoma wins the Big 12?
Oklahoma wins the Big 12. Colorado wins the Pac-12.
Sorry,
Penn State wins the Big 10. And that's what I think is very possible, right?
I think it's Oklahoma.
Also in this scenario, it would be Ohio State is going to stay where they're at. Michigan moves up. Washington moves down. Clemson moves down. The next thing in there is Penn State might potentially move up because they're number 7 right now.
Potential for three Big Ten teams.
That's what I'm saying. So all of a sudden you have Bama, whom we've deemed is in no matter what, untouchable, even if they don't win the SEC.
Sure.
Ohio State's not going to win the Big Ten. Michigan's not going to win the Big Ten. So now you have three teams that did not win their conference potentially in this Final Four, and it's rounded out by
college football is fucked up.
The Big 12 winner, the Pac-12 winner, the Big 10 winner. Only one of them would get in. And the ACC winner wouldn't get in. And the SEC winner wouldn't get in. So again,
yeah,
this is a very realistic possibility because Washington is a very young team that's ahead of schedule. Clemson is a team that's been underperforming all year. Doesn't have a signature win, say, for the Florida State win and the Louisville win, but Louisville got a little exposed later on in the season. Very possible that you're going to see Clemson and Wisconsin. Again, I just want to say this again. You're going to see Clemson and Washington lose, which means that the Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, Big 12, SEC, all of those five Power 5 conference winners will be jostling for one spot.
Yeah.
So again, I ask you, gentlemen, let's say that Florida wins the SEC. Let's say that Virginia Tech wins the ACC. Oklahoma wins the Big 12. Colorado the Pac-12. Penn State the Big 10. Who gets in?
Number one, that is the most chaotic championship weekend ever.
Yeah.
And I love it.
It's only two games. Again, it seems like it, but we're not even talking about Oklahoma State, a team that is, you know, could very well upset Oklahoma and be in that situation.
Yeah,
what you just said, and this is why we bring this up, potentially the most chaotic college football playoff weekend in the history of these conference championship weekends is going to happen with only two results going against the grain, and that's Clemson losing. And that's Washington losing.
Yeah.
Clemson and Washington lose. What the fuck do you do? And again, I ask you, gentlemen, one more time. And maybe what we'll do is we'll each pick one and we'll argue the merits of it. Oklahoma, Florida, Colorado, Penn State, Virginia Tech. These are big blue bloods. All these five teams just won their conference. You can only take one. Who are you going to take?
I think despite the fact that both Michigan, Wisconsin, and Penn State are ranked 5, 6, 7. even if 3 and 4 Clemson and Washington lose, the committee is not going to put 3 Big Ten teams in the playoff. It's not going to happen. What they would do, on the other hand, is they might keep either Clemson or Washington in the picture.
No, if they lost their conference championship, they're out.
No, but because the other teams didn't win their conference championship, so who fucking cares at this point?
So you would put Clemson and Washington.
I'm not saying I would, but I'm trying to predict what I think the committee is going to do.
Oh, the committee's dying to have another Michigan Ohio State. I mean, these are two of the 4 biggest programs of all time.
Yeah.
It would be the rematch everybody wants to see. Jim Harbaugh getting fined for blasting the refs, neutral field.
if it was me, I would put A&M and Texas in the playoffs, and then we would see what was really going to happen.
But you see what I'm saying? I think the answer we're missing is, well, who's the biggest program? Because you ultimately got to sell this thing. You know, as Colin Cowherd said last week, the number one fear at ESPN, a company that just invested a fuck ton of money into this college football playoff to be the exclusive home and provider of this giant tournament, is that, guess what, folks? Last year you had 2 Southern teams playing in the championship. Ratings weren't great.
Yeah.
This is a very regional sport that is not moving the needle nationally, and so you've got to have big programs. If ESPN, and Cowherd made the point last week that ESPN is looking for any reason to have USC be a part of this. Now, obviously, not going to happen because ESPN was hoping that Utah would upset Colorado and USC would get a chance to play Washington this weekend. It's not going to happen. So the answer is, well, of these situations, Oklahoma is the biggest program, so you put Oklahoma in there. But is that fair? And is that the best team that's left over in this situation?
I think
that would be my thinking. It would be Oklahoma, biggest program.
No. I think you put Colorado. If Colorado wins their championship game, then they're going in. If they beat Washington, ranked number 4 Washington, and OU beats Oak State, then Colorado's going into that number 4.
Actually,
position.
Yeah, that makes...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I would
mean, as long if it's just chaos and you're factoring in ratings and you're worried about that, and the number 4 team is theoretically, you know, lambs being thrown to the slaughter anyways, like let's see what Lamar Jackson can do on a big stage, a huge stage.
Oh, no.
No, he's
Louisville's way out.
He's still way out. He can still win the Heisman.
Louisville's lost too many big games. They had their chance to play their way in, and they lost.
Yeah, that's true.
They're 9-3. They're ranked number 13 in the committee right now. So
I guess all this to say, Saturday's going to be must see TV. Yeah. and I truly think that Clemson is a team that is in serious trouble. Yeah. And I also think there's a little bit of a sort of, you know, at best, they're looking at like a Jameis Winston in 2014 when he played Oregon in that kind of hangover year. Got smashed in the Rose Bowl in the college football semi. So prediction time. So we know what the rankings are today. We know what can happen. Who's going to go to the college football playoff? We'll start with Logan.
If I'm just going to be boring and say what I honestly believe is going to happen, it's Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson and Washington. Honestly, I think it's going to stay the way it is right now.
Seeing as the way the top 4 teams have been losing throughout the season, I like the way how Logan laid it out. I could see Colorado beating Washington and then sneaking in to that
and taking their place.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
But I think if Colorado's going to make it in, both Clemson and Washington are going to have to lose.
Yeah, so it's
going to have to be both of them.
I could even see, as far as like just crazy scenarios, since the whole college football playoff was kind of his idea, he's not going to have a whole lot to do anyway. Barack Obama coming in saying, "You know what? I'm going to fix this shit. Now that I got time, let's fix this."
My prediction is, Bama's in, Ohio State's in, Clemson gets it done against Virginia Tech. I just can't in good conscience pick that.
I love Virginia Tech, but yeah, I agree.
And then the 4 seed, I think, is where I do think that's where you're going to have a little bit of chaos because, again, you're looking at Oklahoma, Penn State, Washington, all have claim. Right now it's going to default to Washington. But if Washington loses.
Can you imagine that kind of Cinderella story if Colorado comes back from the shit show they've been?
I would love to see Colorado
years, and they make the playoffs, even if they don't make it past the first round.
Yeah.
Holy crap!
And they're rolling. And
that is such a Cinderella story.
That is one thing that's been kind of cool about this whole playoff scenario, and that there is a sense of pride in being that number 4 team that makes it.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
So here's my prediction: Washington loses to Colorado,
and then it gets, and then things get a little chaotic because you have Colorado.
Who does Clemson play again?
Clemson plays Virginia Tech. I think Clemson's okay. In. Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, book it. But then again, I'm going to have Washington lose. This is a young team, a year ahead of schedule. A talented team can match up with them. A team that can score points can keep up with them. That leaves, are we gonna put Colorado in there? Are we going to put Michigan in there? Penn State in there? Are we going to put Oklahoma in there, potentially? Guess who we're going to put in there? Wisconsin Badgers.
No team
that beat LSU at home.
There is no way that Wisconsin's going in there ahead of Michigan.
They just won the Big Ten. You got to win your conference championship. It's very important. You just beat a Penn State team that beat Ohio State and Wisconsin. Great home win. Beat LSU, a team that Vegas loves.
But the problem is that they're 11-2, and Michigan is 11-1. They have two more. They have one extra loss.
Yeah, you're right. I guess you're right.
I'm just bullshitting here right now, but this is what they're thinking right now.
So that's
it's weird how Michigan can be both in the driver's seat and also have screwed themselves.
Yeah,
God, it's so interesting. Yeah, I guess you got to. I don't know. I guess Michigan in that case. So all right, fine. Bam, Ohio State, Clemson, Michigan, book it. That's what I got. Because we agree that if Washington goes down, the next team up is Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which so does Kirk Herbstreit and a number of other pundits. You know.
Well, there you go. Bam, Ohio State, Clemson, Michigan. I still think Wisconsin is going to come out and just beat the pants off of Penn State. I think that's a very average, ahead of schedule team that benefits from a great home field advantage. And you take them on a neutral side to a boring city like Indianapolis, playing a team like Wisconsin that's been there before, experience, again, beat LSU at home, no stranger to big games. I like Wisconsin to win the Big Ten big this weekend. And then Wisconsin-USC should be a fun Rose Bowl.
Yeah, good for them.
All right, folks, let's talk a little NFL while we're talking football. But before we do that, I suppose I started off the show joshing around, goofing around. I want to talk a little bit about we're not going to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. We're going to talk.
I'm not editing this out.
We're going to talk a little NFL football. You don't have to edit anything out.
Yeah.
We should probably check in with our Inside the Locker Fantasy League. Logan's out. Elliot's out.
Hey, I'm on the bubble.
Number two seed.
I'm currently hanging on to the number three seed. But I could lose this weekend.
I'm the number one seed in my main league.
We all have a million leagues, Logan. We're talking about the Inside the Locker Super League.
I know, I'm just trying to save face here.
Yeah, I tell you what, my man, I have, I think I'm 7-4-1 in third place, but I think a real question, a real thing to consider is like, all right, what do you do? I want to throw a couple names at you guys and just sort of like, I suppose a couple of league winning tips that I think are gonna be money down the stretch. Colin Kaepernick and Sammy Watkins, down the stretch. I think Colin Kaepernick is a top four quarterback the rest of the way, and I think Sammy Watkins, if you have him on your team on your bench, stashed him, somebody cut him, and you can make him your wide receiver three. I think you can expect wide receiver one production the rest of the way. I think it's time to say goodbye to players like LeGarrette Blount who've carried you this far, and you want to just start them every week because they get so many touches and they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
Deion Lewis is back. Tom Brady's throwing darts. You're not getting those guaranteed red zone touches. And I think it's time to seriously look at just riding some hot hands. Tyler Boyd from Cincinnati playing in place of A.J. Green. Targeted like a beast. And I think he hit his floor this past weekend against Baltimore, against a very good team. And oh, by the way, 5 catches for 62 yards, which is nothing special, but that's his floor going forward, I think. And he finishes the season with Cleveland, Pittsburgh, two teams without defensive backs, playing Philly this weekend. Very, very winnable matchup. And then I think you just have to like just throw caution to the wind on some of these players and just decide who you're in on and who you're out on.
Yeah, I tend to bench him when he plays really well, but Quincy Enunwa playing really well.
Completely
for the Jets.
In on Quincy Enunwa, yeah.
Yeah, I got him on the
New York
bench.
Jets.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Kaepernick. He throws to Curley a lot.
No.
Seems like he throws to Curley a lot.
I don't. You know.
I had him for a little bit, and I don't know. I guess Cap came back recently, but yeah, even then, it's not.
You just have to, you know, there's just something. People tend to have bad fantasy weeks around Thanksgiving, because that's when a lot of the pieces that they have just don't click, that they've like thrown in, and it just doesn't work. Greg Olsen, I think, is a guy who you have to move on from.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look at people like CJ Fedorowicz. And you have to boldly say, I'm not going to start you, okay? You're not my dad.
I find myself constantly in a position with my first pick in that Dak just doesn't throw to him, and Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing. Luckily, I mean, I picked up Cole Beasley, and he throws to Cole Beasley a hell of a lot. but it's a little disappointing that I've benched Dez Bryant more than I've started him. But, I mean, as an insurance policy, towards the end of the season, it's probably not a bad insurance policy.
Well, so here's my all. These are superstars that have gotten you here in many ways, and you have to say, look, it's over. It's over, dude. It's over. And I'm going to tell you who to put in their place, and I'm just going to run through this very quickly. So your tight end, Greg Olsen. It's over, dude. It's over. Okay. One of the best in the league. One of the best in 2015, but this is a team going south, team with real unsolvable problems. Lost big to Oakland. I think they're checked out for the season. Not enough targets with Kelvin Benjamin back this year. He's just not getting the volume.
Yeah.
Greg Olsen, it's over, dude. It's over. Your wide receivers, Dez Bryant, it's over, dude.
Yeah. He's also going to the can't drop list, too, so he's just there.
Tricky end of the season? Yeah, you certainly don't want to drop him. Exciting player, but you just can't count on the volume. Now, there was a run from like week 8 to like week 12 where he was the number one receiver in fantasy, but you can't afford to have another one of those 5 catches for 60 yards games. I don't care if he was playing against Josh Norman on Thanksgiving Day. He should have torched the Skins. And again, Dak Prescott's a quarterback who just doesn't have – he hasn't fleshed out his toolkit yet, and that means some of the downfield throws that Romo would make in tight spaces to Dez aren't going to be there. And even when Romo was making those, Dez wasn't getting great separation. Dez wasn't really really getting the targets that a number one receiver like Julio Jones or A.J. Green get anyway to justify what you paid for him or what you used to draft him. Another guy, Brandon Cooks, not happening, dude. Guess what? Michael Thomas, the rookie at Ohio State, is the real deal in New Orleans, and he's taken your role. Willie Snead, bigger, faster, cheaper. Multitude of running backs coming on big. Mark Ingram is going to come on huge down the stretch. And again, that's just more bad news for Brandon Cook. He's the forgotten man. Even Kobe Fleener going to be big down the stretch. Brandon Cook, sorry, dude, it's not happening.
So. Kobe Fleener's fucked me so many times this season.
No, I'm not saying that he's a guy you can build around. I'm saying, no, dude, it's over. So instead of Dez Bryant and Brandon Cooks, who are you going to play? Who are you going to call? I think it's time to accept that Davante Adams is going to be a big part of your home stretch run. And you have him on your team as like your third or fourth receiver. Throw him in your lineup, guys. Throw him in your lineup. He's getting the touches. He's getting the downfield looks. He's getting the red zone looks. Scored 2 touchdowns Monday night against Philly. Almost scored a third. He got a really great look in the red zone from Aaron Rodgers. Not once, but twice on one drive. And another receiver, again, I already talked about him, Sammy Watkins down the stretch. Tyrod Taylor throws to one guy, and it's going to be Sammy Watkins. He loves having him down the stretch. Again, these are running backs that, dude, guess what? It's not happening. Your team is not that good. Number one, Devontae Booker. It hurts because he's one of those exciting players. You think of the Denver running game. You think of the touches. You think of how much Trevor Siemian needs a running game. It's just not happening, dude. It's just not happening this year. Next year, maybe, but he's just not as good as CJ Anderson. I don't think people realize what a real loss that was for the Denver Broncos. The cuts, the reads, the blocking. Devontae Booker's still very much playing like a rookie. Guess what? It's not happening, dude. Another guy that I think. Guess what? It's not happening, dude. Another guy that you need to stop stashing in your lineup.
You're in a catchphrase.
I don't know.
It's not happening, dude.
How about a player who
it works?
You had to take at the beginning of your draft, has disappointed you all season with 20 carries for 60 yards. Then this weekend goes to the Louisiana Superdome. I know it's called the Mercedes-Benz Dome, but it'll always be the Louisiana Superdome in my heart. This place is like Coors Field. This place is like, and then somebody else said that on Twitter, so I can't take credit for that comparison. But the Louisiana Superdome is one of those places where fantasy points just seem to happen. Jared Goff is going downfield. This is working. This is happening. Kenny Britt all of a sudden becoming fantasy relevant. Another guy that I think, I tell you what, I would rather start Kenny Britt and Devontae Adams than Dez Bryant and Brandon Cooks this weekend. Real talk. Todd Gurley, it's not happening, dude. It's not happening this season for you. I don't know if the offensive line isn't there. I don't know if there's cluster injuries that are. I don't follow the Rams enough, but I do know that if you can't produce against the Saints, guess what? It's not happening, dude. It's not happening. And lastly, quarterback. I already said, I love my man Cam Newton, one of my favorite players. Fun player, big guy, big arm. Guess what? It's not happening. It's not happening, dude.
I thought you were gonna pull it out the last
minute. It's not happening, dude. Nah. Colin Kaepernick is again just a top tier player the rest of the way. What we're seeing, the guys said this over at RotoViz Radio. For years we've wondered what that Chip Kelly offense looks like with a guy who can run, who can pass, and who gets all of that volume, all of that work. Colin Kaepernick just breezily throwing for 290 yards, 3 touchdowns. And oh, by the way, I ran for 100 yards. Are you kidding me? Cam Newton? It's not happening, dude. So there you go. Folks, good luck with your fantasy football home stretch. I will certainly be keeping you posted.
I'm currently sitting at sixth place, and the name of my team is drafting for fifth place. So I really need to get a win this week to make sure that I live up to my legacy. And the good news is I'm playing against Elliot. So chances are I'll probably win that.
Who's probably still going to start Gronk this week.
Yeah. Elliot, your team sucks.
Throwing shade at Elliot while he's out.
Guess what, Elliot?
I love it.
Guess what, Elliot?
It's not happening.
It's not happening, dude.
I do like that. That's pretty good.
It's terrible. All right. Let's we're going to do a little NBA live look in here. And what that means is, you know, the NBA season started. Yes, it did. It really did. And
there's proof. I saw it the other day.
And what you probably didn't know is that JC hosts the best NBA podcast that you've never heard of. It's called
The Podcast of Basketball.
And guess what? The NBA is happening. So JC is going to give us a little live look and tell us.
It's right here on the oneofus.net network. So follow along.
And tell us what exactly we need to be paying attention to.
Well, it's kind of an arms race in stats. So, I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of fantasy basketball players out there. One of the more interesting things that people were curious about going in is how Russell Westbrook was going to play without Kevin Durant. There was that year that Kevin Durant was injured a lot, and Russell Westbrook racked up triple doubles all throughout that season. This year, his first season truly without Kevin Durant because he's on the Warriors, actually completely averaging a triple-double, something like 13 rebounds or 11 assists. I might have those two numbers backwards, 32 points a game. He's still not a very efficient shooter, but, I mean, averaging a triple-double is impressive as all hell. LeBron James, my favorite player, averaging career highs in rebounds and assists, and watching the Cavs play is a thing of beauty. People think of the Warriors and they think of them being a team that just hoists up three-pointer after three-pointer, but the Cavs put up just as many threes as the Warriors, if not more. So watching them play is just tons of ball movement. You can tell that LeBron doesn't have scoring on his mind. He just wants – he's filling the stats. But one of the more surprising things, player that I've been really hard on over the last couple of years, and – one of the things I always say on my podcast is I'm happy to be wrong about anything that I'm defiant about, because if I'm wrong about something, then that means I'm seeing a good product. James Harden is somebody who I've clowned for years, and even on this show I've clowned, because he's still not a great defensive player. But this year under Mike D'Antoni's system made the transition to point guard, and he's leading the league in assists, and he's leading the league in scoring. That hasn't been done since Nate Archibald did it in the 60s. Wow. Watching him play, also a thing of beauty. And I always said before, even when I was really hard on him, watching him play offense is really great, because he's got a really great dribble, lulls you to sleep. He's got a deadly step-back jumper. That was always great to watch. It's just on defense, he was always super frustrating. He's still a little frustrating this year, but he makes up for it with his offense and the way he distributes the ball. So those are the three big surprises. Just how efficient those three main guys who are going to be in your MVP race at the end of the year. Just they're doing everything. It's crazy.
Well, fuck yeah, motherfucker.
Yeah. and if you just want, LeBron's my favorite player. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, those two guys are just playing. They're playing great MVP level. If you just want a fun player to watch, just a big dumb smile on my face every time I'm watching this guy play, and another guy that I clowned when he was drafted, and like I said, I'm happy to be wrong because he's playing amazing. He's becoming one of my favorite players. Kristaps Porzingis, 7'3" for Latvia, very goofy looking, super thin, looks every bit of 7'3" tall, moves like a gazelle. It's crazy how agile he is for as tall as he is. Shoots threes, shoots free throws, dunks, rebounds. Doesn't pass a whole lot, but just he's crazy to watch.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a really good year for basketball. Like there's some really good basketball being played in the NBA right now.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's great.
All right, folks, that's our show. I was going to talk about soccer, but I don't want to do that.
You can talk about soccer a little bit.
No.
No. Okay.
No use of fuck. Welcome to the, we have to. It's a big story. Jurgen Klinsmann, longtime 5-year USA coach, fired. There's not much left to say except that it was the kind of thing that should have been done 2 years ago. Good riddance to that. Bruce Arena is a good stopgap. As Americans, you know, imagine taking a job, and you go to the job, and you spend 5 years at the job saying, "You guys suck. Your product is no good." Well, that's what Klinsmann did. About his own players, his own domestic league. They got fed up with him because he would say that, and then he would use the domestic players that he had and try to get results with a team that didn't really believe in anything that he was doing. So look for Team USA to play a lot bigger and better going forward. And I think Bruce Arena is a good coach, right man for the job. He may be a stopgap. He may not be a visionary, but Team USA, the difference, he was dismissed from the team 10 years ago. 10 years later, Team USA has better players, a better talent pool, more depth, and I'm excited for the short term.
So I feel like the and granted, I haven't been following U.S. soccer or any soccer really in a long time, but I feel like Team USA has been playing better in the past since the last World Cup than they have been in recent memory.
Right.
So like, is this because of him, or is it because of talent, or a little bit of both?
No, I mean, it was despite Klinsmann. Klinsmann, what he brought to the table was this rock star attitude. I mean, he was a guy who won a World Cup as a player.
Is it exposure? Is it like more Americans are getting excited about it? So like they're getting more support, more like young talent? Anything?
No. Okay. It's that the USA since 2002, if you think about world soccer, like college football, USA was like a top 15 team anyway. It was like a top 15 team. So when you're the number 15 team in the world and sometimes you play a 4 team, well, you can upset them. Mm. It's not that crazy of an upset.
You're going to be competitive, but you're never going to win at all.
You're going to be competitive. And there's a few teams that you're going to run into where, yeah, exactly. You know, the 15 team in the, like if you play Alabama, it's just not going to go well, right? Mm. Well, Klinsmann.
Yeah, I learned that. Right.
And so, again, what Klinsmann lacked, Klinsmann was a visionary. He said, "We want to come in here. We want to reinvent the wheel. We want to have kids who are excited to play soccer in the inner cities. We want to recruit the inner cities. We want to recruit USA's talent base. We want to reinvent the youth program, the youth development program. We want to redo the way we do business and the way we play." You know, USA plays within itself. At its best under Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena, and when it's made it runs in 2010 and 2002, it did so because it played within itself. And like, again, I'll use March Madness as an analogy now. When you get hot, when, you know, a team from a mid-major, when you're Gonzaga, when you guys make a run, you can make a run in a tournament when you believe in the team, the philosophy, and you play within yourself. And what he did with Team USA was say, We want to play like the Netherlands, like Spain, like Argentina. We want to play attacking, offensive football, high-flying football, wonder football. But he didn't have the personnel to do that. He had a couple of really young, exciting players. But and to his credit, he went and got kids like Julian Green, Aaron Johansson,
mixed disco rude players that had dual eligibility and flipped them and recruited them. But he didn't have any tactical vision and kind of embarrassed himself playing against a lot of teams. And when you go to Costa Rica and lose 4-0, that's a last straw. It shouldn't be like that. We're way too good for that. That should be like at worst a 1-0 loss, because what USA does best is tight, compact, park the bus defense, and you lose a close game on a bad call or something. But you can't lose 4-0 to Costa Rica. And what that showed was that the one thing the USA had, which was tight defense and leaning on guys like over the years, like Oguchi Onyeyu and to Jeff Cameron to whomever, when you lose that, then you don't really have any kind of an identity or an ability to attack. So there you go, Klinsmann. It didn't work.
It sounds like he lost the players.
Yeah, and it may be another 20 years before we have, you know, for all the hype about Christian Pulisic, who is doing great things at Borussia Dortmund, well, guess what? Italy, Spain, France, Germany, Brazil, Argentina, they got 20 Christian Pulisics that never see the field because they're on their B team.
Is that the I heard Bill Simmons talk about there's like an 18-year-old kid who's like, right, up and coming. Is that him?
Yeah, 18 years old, really creative, really fast, can do a lot. And what's most exciting is that he plays for Borussia Dortmund, which is one of the big boy clubs in the German league, which is probably the best league in the world. He's lighting it up over there. He's playing Champions League ball, playing meaningful minutes, assists in Champions League, invaluable experience, and definitely has a chance to be big. But again, Christ, eight teenage soccer players who don't pan out, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
So the Christian Pulisic story is exciting, but what should be the norm is that you have players regularly starting in the upper divisions of soccer. But I think what people overlook is that Major League Soccer, even though nobody fucking watches it, it's a very emerging, well-funded, good product. And I think it's fostering great competition. So yeah, you may be a mid-major league, but you're still, you know, Conference USA, you're still the Mountain West, you're still like, you know, you can be like Boise State. And if the United States in the next 20 years doesn't become Italy or Spain, that's fine. Be the United States. Be a top 15 team. Know that you're going to have some great runs. Know that every couple, you know, you'll get a good player and you'll get a good generation. You'll make a run. That's a good place to be. I think the quest to be number one is something that hurt us a little bit. Instead of just saying, hey, Bruce Arena, Bob Bradley, pretty good coaches. By the way, Bob Bradley this season, became the first American coach to be a head coach in the Premier League. Nice. So,
which I want to root for an American team, yeah, in soccer. But I was also going to say, anything interesting happening in the Premier League right now?
I think the big boy clubs are really coming on strong, coming on big. Liverpool, coached by Jurgen Klopp, who's this like German phenom, playing really fast, exciting soccer and kind of like just housing teams and scoring a lot of goals. Liverpool, clear-cut number one. Chelsea, a team that hired Antonio Conte this season, who used to be Italy's head coach, built Chelsea as this like defensive, tough team to crack. A lot of superstars. You're talking about guys like Oscar and Willian coming off the bench for Chelsea. Just big names, big club, playing big defense. Chelsea and Liverpool, you're number one and number two. Arsenal's always Arsenal. Top four every year. Perennially good. Really talented. This is probably Arsene Wenger's last year, who's a legendary French coach, but he peaked in 2003. So this is kind of a swan song for Arsenal. Manchester City, coached by Pep Guardiola, who's probably the best manager in the world. He won titles at Barcelona. He won titles at Bayern Munich. Now this year, first year with Manchester City. Fast, fluid, attacking, beautiful, well-funded. Buy your seat at the table club. Man City is hella cool. And they'll probably get messy in a couple of years. So there you go. That's your big four. Tottenham, clear-cut five. Manchester United, underperforming under Jose Mourinho, clear-cut six. And, hey, Bob Bradley, coaching Swansea, he might avoid relegation. So that's what we'll be rooting for the rest of the way. Yeah, I'm a Tottenham fan, for those that don't know. A team that was a contender to the end, finished in third place. Made the Champions League this year. They're already eliminated from the Champions League. They used all that revenue from last season and bought prospects and not stars, and that's why they're not a serious contender.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to see what happens next year. So
hell yeah, it's gonna be a fun season.
And I appreciate someone who has the knowledge explaining it a little bit deeper. deeper for me. So I don't have to necessarily just look at it and be like, I have no clue what the fuck is going on.
Thanks, man. All right, guys. That's our show. It's at the Locker. We'll see you guys next week. I don't know. I don't have a funny sign-off today.
That was funny enough.
Yeah. All
right. Bye, guys.
Later.